Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me. It's my pleasure, as always. I'm on the road today, as I told you earlier. I'm in Houston, Texas, and so I've got my on-the-road broadcast equipment, and so if it sounds different today, it's because it is different. We are. We're on the road, and we connect a little bit differently when we're on the road than when we are back in our home environs. Notice I didn't use the word regular, and we never use that word around here. And we certainly don't use it when our good friend Jim Ostroff is joining us. There's nothing regular about Jim. I meant normal. There's nothing normal about Jim. We never use that word around here. And he is our good friend. He's associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors and a pretty darn good egg. Jim Ostroff, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good morning, Jim. Good morning, everyone. I am pretty irregular, I guess. happy to be here. Happy to be here on Family Radio.
Hey, Jim, one of the things that's been interesting to me, and I'm glad you guys kind of reported on it this week in the lead story of your letter, and that is the concept of this word change. You know, a number of the presidential hopefuls, not just Democrats, not just Republicans, but a number of the hopefuls have been touting change. We're going to change things. Look for change. We're the people of change. I'm the politician of change. Well, here's my question, Jim. Change what?
Change the things that you don't like. That's what it's all about.
But what I don't like may not be what you don't like. Well, you may like what I don't like, and so if you change what I don't like, then I've made you unhappy. I mean, there's a lot of vagueness in that word change, isn't there?
Or, as they say in marketing, you know, aspirational hopes. And of course, the bottom line here, as we know, is that it's marketing, it's campaigning, and it's basically trying to reach the center of a majority of voters. And today, like 2,000 years ago and more, politicians saying, "Vote for me, and I'll make things better." That's what it's about, of course, trying to play on that. And, of course, this thing, we could say, look at 1980 and Ronald Reagan saying, "Are you better today than you were 4 years ago?"
There were a lot of things that needed to be changed back in 1980. This was a lot sicker country in 1980 than it is in 2008.
And again, I'm just saying 20 years before that, in 1960, a key point here was change, at least, you know, in terms of John Kennedy.
Yeah.
It's really sort of a standard election tool. But the thing is obvious now. Hillary Clinton goes and bashes Obama and says, what? And in that case, she's correct. But the thing is that in terms of change and what do you want, but you know, let's not go and take sides here. During elections, I mean, there's sort of a standard thing where candidates say, you know, I will bring change. I'll bring the change you want, obviously.
One of the things that worries me about this concept of change, Jim, is, you know, we can all agree to disagree about certain things. Now, Obama is four square against the war in Iraq. We already know what he plans to do, what he wants to do, what he thinks he will do, what he's promised to do with regard to the war in Iraq. And reasonable people can agree or disagree with him about that.
That's right.
And there are other issues that either one of the candidates, Republican or Democrat, have that reasonable people can agree or disagree about. But what worries me, Jim, is that some of what might happen in this whole desire to change everything, we might do what my grandmother used to call throwing the baby out with the bathwater. There will be some unintended consequences That I, mm-hmm. that's, those are the things that I worry about.
Well, and that always is an issue. That always is a concern. But I have to say, on the other hand, the reality is, as we find so many times, that no matter who it is, who is elected, this or that, you can only go so far. There really is the and that's our system. There are built-in breaks over here. So, you know, though anything that I really feel this judged to be very excessive won't make it. But even with that, the person who is president can make an enormous difference in the direction that this country takes and that the world takes.
And of course, Jim, they're going to have to deal with 535 pretty obstinate people,
members
of Congress. Well, even if a Democrat becomes president, and we're going to continue to have a Democrat-controlled Congress, you know, they're going to have their own ideas. So some of this change that some of the politicians are trying to promise, you know, they can't even make sure that happens, even if it's their own party in Congress.
No, they can't. Honestly, they can't deliver on all of their promises. It's a general direction that is different, that will be different, depending on whomever is elected president. Be different from this President Bush or from Clinton or from the last President Bush. It will be.
Right.
It does matter. That vote does matter. You know, I'm saying significant difference in the way this country, say, would have gone if Gore was president or Bush is president. Again, better, worse, whatever. But there really was and would have been a difference. And there will be this time, too, whether it be a McCain or...
This is a very, very important election year, Jim. This may be the most important election year of my lifetime so far.
It could be, and that dates back to the late 1940s.
That's but right. That goes all the way back.
All the way back there into the 20th century. But what I'm saying is that we will see. But I feel certain that it is among the most important since post World War II elections.
Yeah.
There is so
well,
much.
Folks, one of the things I want, as we go to a break, Jim, I just want to point out to people, when you listen to any politician, Republican, Democrat, mugwump, whatever, when you listen to those guys, those ladies, talk about change, ask them what does that mean. Ask them what are you going to change? Because you may be thinking change one thing, they may be thinking change something else. So make sure that you don't get what my mama used to call a pig in a poke. Make sure that you get what you think you're going to get. 20 after we come back, we're going to talk about what the new president can expect to deal with regard to a number of issues like estate tax and global warming and other issues like that. Right after these messages, stay with us.
Standing on the mountain looking down on a city, the way he ought to feel is a doggone pity. Teardrop falling down the mountainside. Many times I've been
there. We're back. It's 23 after the hour.
We used to be so happy.
I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me today. Thanks for being part of my day. My websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com and askjim.biz.biz. Check both of them out and use them to your advantage. We built them for you. There's no barrier to entry. If you can get there, we'll let you hang out and use all our stuff. We built it so you could have the maximum opportunity to be successful in your small business, and I hope you will go there and just use our stuff and don't abuse it. Just use it. Jim Ostroff is our guest and our good friend, and we're talking about a little politics today on the lead page of the most recent Kiplinger editor. Kiplinger letter, I should say, and Jim is associate editor there at Kiplinger. Jim, one of the things you guys point out is that with all of the hope and the dreams of whoever is going to be president coming up in 2009, they've got some serious issues on the table that they're going to have to deal with, and one of the first ones you mentioned is one that is near and dear. The issue, not the tax, but the issue, is near and dear to my heart, and that's the estate tax. Talk to us about that.
Well, there are. I was going to say that this is something, obviously, that Bush got and put through, but it expires soon. So
what has been happening is, if I remember Jim correctly, is the estate tax has been, they've been diminishing the impact of the estate tax on the lower estate value people, more and more, you know, like small business owners and farmers. They've been lowering every year. They've been lowering the impact a little bit to where is it next year that it goes to zero, or is it 2010?
I think it's mostly it's 2010. I believe that it would be zero.
I mean when
now.
I say zero, they basically abolish it
because it's abolished.
It's eliminated so, 1 year, but then tell them what happens the next year.
And the thing is, you know, we really feel that there will. All right, this is going to run out. It would run out in 2009, and so therefore for calendar 2010, no, you know, we go back to where it was.
It goes right back to where it was before, folks.
Jim,
slow down a second. I want to land on this for a second, folks. Here, I know you've heard me talk about this on the show before, but let's make sure that we're clear about this. The estate tax, I think it's next year, it goes to where it's basically eliminated, and in 2010.
It comes
back as if nothing had ever happened to it. So if you die on, if someone dies on December 31st, 2009, then their taxes will be one, will have one calculation. If they die January 1st of 2010, it'll be as if they died 10 years prior.
That's right. And
the estate will be taxed at a much higher rate. Now, how bizarre a world is that?
Well, Congress has a great record for resurrecting vampires and things.
Unbelievable. How can they do that? How could they pass something like
that? And we don't think...
And claim to have any shame.
Right. And we, you know, the thing is, we don't... In this case, we feel it's too big a shame. And that is, they won't let that happen. There'll be some compromise here in the Congress next year to be signed by the next president. It won't be repealed permanently, forever. Put the stake in the heart, but it will be continued for several more years. And the one thing is this: we feel certain that, you know, estates of $3.5 million and below will be completely sheltered. And it's just an issue that won't go away.
I want to remind people, Jim, that a little over 100 years ago, the United States was in a war with Spain called the Spanish-American War, right?
Oh, and we needed a little extra money at the time.
So we needed some money, and we passed the estate tax. Now, that war is over. We don't need that money anymore, but the estate tax never went away. Now, that's classic American politics, isn't it?
It's true. So many taxes and various programs have a life of their own, and they're nearly immortal. They go on; they outlive generations of people because it's money. It's a source of money. The same thing with the telephone tax that was put on. I don't remember if it was a Spanish-American War. I mean, it was during that period, but I believe it finally was
repealed. I think it was the war we had with Liechtenstein, Jim.
It was the mouse
the telephone
that roared.
Tax,
it roared, and we decided to tax the telephone. But we think there'll be, and basically this, there'll be some compromise, and it'll sort of be extended.
This will be one of the front burner issues for whoever is the next president, Jim.
It will be, absolutely.
And small business owners, small farmers out there, anybody out there that where you know, so many of you out there. You built a business, and maybe all these years, maybe over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, you've been running this business, and you've never done anything much more than make a living. A lot of you out there are like that. You've made a pretty good living for yourself, but you haven't gotten rich out of the business, but you've owned this real estate. You own this farm now, and your inventory is paid for maybe, et cetera, et cetera. Well, guess what? When you die, the government's going to come in and inventory all that and give your family a bill for it, a tax bill for it, if the estate tax is allowed to come back. So you've got to be involved. You've got to get involved in the election this year, the one in 2008. You've got to be involved in how this is going to turn out. And certainly after the election and when we get the new president. Jim Oxtrop, stand by. Quick break. I'll get off my soapbox. When we come back after these messages, more of this kind of stuff on the other side. Stay with us. By the way, Van Morrison, take us out. Moondance, one of my favorite songs.
Back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me. Thanks for being part of my day. If you just tuned in, we're glad you did that. Welcome aboard. Jim Oxtrop is our guest, associate editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and we're talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world these days with their most recent letter. And Jim, we were talking about estate taxes. Let's continue the tax thing and talk about tax rates. What's going to happen in 2009? You know, President Bush's taxes, his tax cuts that he enacted in 2003, do they expire this year or is it next year?
I believe it's next year. The thing is, you know, we see they will be, we call them middle class tax cuts, and I think that is accurate. They'll be extended. But if families making over $250,000 a year will pay a higher marginal tax rate, close to 40%.
You think the President Bush's tax now the Democrats have said they would not extend those. The Democrat candidates have said they would not extend the Bush tax cuts.
They have not.
Both
they have
of them
said that. But still there will be sufficient number of people from the other side of the aisle that can hold up other legislation, so there will be some compromise, including, you know, higher taxes on dividends and capital gains, we believe. And the thing is, of course, here, you know, it's the Congress gives and Congress takes away. They need the money, and they go and they boost taxes. And so do state and local governments.
Jim, what I'm having a hard time, and I'm going to try not to get on my soapbox about this, folks, but I might have to get maybe one foot up on it. Jim, we have, if there ever was an opportunity to witness a supply-side economics experiment,
we've
been able to see that in the last 5 years.
Well, that's right. We have.
We cut taxes across the board. We cut taxes on investment. We cut taxes on passive income like dividends and on investment like on capital gains. We cut all that, and the economy grew millions of jobs. We had an expansion that was almost unparalleled. Mm-hmm. That was only cut short basically by what I consider to be extra greed on the part of Wall Street, not because of the taxes.
Yeah.
And Jim, and also probably too much liquidity by the Fed. But in terms of supply side economics, this experiment was proven to work, and supply side economics is a phenomenon that works. And here's how it is, Jim, in its simplest form. I've asked small business owners all over the world this question: if you had more of your tax dollars back, you didn't have to pay the government as much in tax dollars, what would you do with that money? And 100% to the person that I asked that question to, without thinking, without a blink, said, I would put it back in my business. That, ladies and gentlemen, is supply-side economics.
They do, and we saw this work. We saw the results 20 years previous over here, from 81 on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So my question is, Jim, what is it about that? And by the way, in the process, the government has received record income tax receipts.
That's
what
right.
is it about? Even the most hardcore liberal left wing, any business pro tax politician, there's nothing they love more than tax dollars. Why would they not like that? Why wouldn't they become devotees of supply side economics?
You know,
I don't get
really,
that.
It comes down to the fact that really it's a basic thing. They know better than you. They do.
Yeah.
They know better.
I don't get it. I just don't get it, Jim.
They know better than you.
But that's what the next president's going to have to deal with is that there is a speed bump out there that's called the renewal of these tax issues, and they're going to have to come up. I mean, they put a sunset when they passed these laws back in 03, right, they put a sunset date on these, and so they knew somebody would have to deal with it, and that's what's happened.
Exactly.
What about global warming, Jim? That's another one that's going to come up.
In short, we feel that there will be restrictions on what we call carbon emissions, carbon dioxide, and methane. It probably would take effect 2010, 2011. And the thing is, that will have monumental effects on our production of electricity, of energy, transportation, and for many, many businesses, even small ones, that small manufacturers will find themselves buying credits or selling credits. We are talking ultimately here about trillions of dollars of investment being affected over the next decade or so.
Has anybody ever proven that the carbon credits actually work, that they actually do what they say they're going to do? We'll come back. Jim and I will talk a little bit more about this. Move on to other topics right after these messages. I'm Jim Blasingame. Jim Osterhoff is our guest. He's with the Kiplinger Editors. I'm with you. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. And we're having a great visit with our good friend Jim Osterhoff, Associate Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And they've got an outstanding website that I encourage you to check out. It's Kiplinger, KIPLINGER.com, Kiplinger.com. And that's where you can find out more about their publications, which includes the letter, the Kiplinger letter that's been published since 1923. And still is a family-run business, which makes me very proud of them. You know how strongly I feel about these things. And that's weekly. That comes out every Friday. I get mine two ways, by electronics and by hard copy. I can't get enough of it. And, of course, we've got the three biweekly letters, the California letter, the tax letter, and the agriculture letter, looking after our farmers, another group of my heroes. And then, of course, they've got a magazine that you can see on the newsstands, and you can subscribe to it on the website and all that stuff. Right, Jim? Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine, the original and, of course, the oldest personal finance magazine.
Right.
And I think it's a great publication. I do.
Lots of stuff. And, again, you can find it in the newsstands. Pick one up and see if you like it. And if you do, they'll subscribe and give you a 30-day free trial of all these publications, actually. Jim, why don't you give us that phone number, too, please?
Yeah, it is 800-544-0155.
Yeah, so check that out. Okay, Jim, wrapping up on the global warming thing, one of the things that I think is at risk here, and it's very, very much at risk, is the global marketplace. You know, I concede that the humans are contributing to and having an impact, probably a negative impact, on the overall ecosystem. I don't think that there's any question that there's some of that going on. Now, are we causing global warming to increase significantly? Is there anything we can possibly do? I mean, if we shut down every single carbon emission event out there on planet Earth and we all went back to living in caves, would that change the pace of global warming? It might change it a little bit, but I don't think it's going to stop it because, Jim, global warming has been going on for 10,000 years since the end of the last ice age.
Well, it has been, and the thing here I got to say, though, and honestly, no matter what you think, a real concern that, you know, the next Congress and administration will go and impose some monumental restraints on
that's
companies.
The scary part.
And I'm saying even small companies, you'll suddenly have
to
account for
down. They can shut down the economy, Jim.
Right, right. And
because the Kyoto standards that so many people are in love with want to take our carbon emissions back to 1990 levels. And, Jim, what I like to remind people about, our economy is more than twice as large today as it was in 1990. So
that's right.
Now, we produce less carbon emissions per dollar of GDP than we did in those days. It is more carbon than we did in 1990, but per dollar of productivity, we produce less than we did in those days of carbon. But still, Jim, there are people who the unintended consequences could be to create, in my opinion, it could create a global depression.
There is always a concern about that. And for even this, you might just say, what if the price of your car right now, in real dollars today, increase, say, 50%? And what if your electricity bill also increased 50%, right, like tomorrow?
And gas went up to $10 a gallon or crazy thing like that.
Right. And that, when we go harumph if gas goes up 5 cents a gallon or something now, and perhaps rightfully, but what if the price doubled very quickly? That has an enormous effect, and it's worrisome.
Well, and Jim, the thing that we've got to do, and I think this is happening, I don't think the marketplace gets enough credit for what it has done in the last 17 or 18 years to improve our carbon footprint situation. And because, as I said, one of the reasons why the higher gas prices, higher oil prices that we're experiencing right now, one of the reasons that that's not having more of a negative impact on our economy is because that per dollar of GDP, petroleum is less important than it used to be.
Absolutely.
That means, Jim, that our machines and everything that we do is more carbon efficient.
More efficient, and we do things different ways. I mean, in terms, you might say, internet communication or teleconferencing.
Right.
All those things make a difference. And in fact, in the last 7 years, U.S. carbon emissions per capita have declined. And I got to say, in Europe, they've increased with all their restrictions. You just think about it.
And Jim, China is now emitting as much carbon. I think the last thing I saw, the carbon is on par with us, but yet their economy is one fifth of our economy. And Jim, in the most recent attempts to get not Kyoto, but another version of that discussion going, China continues to refuse to be part of any kind of an emissions control standard.
That's correct. And by and large, they are as energy efficient as the U.S. was perhaps in like 1945,
100 years ago,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Very inefficient.
Absolutely. So, folks, this is a big political issue going on here. Immigration, Jim, is going to be a biggie, isn't it?
It certainly will. They're passing the buck on it, of course, now because it's an election year. But, we think, and others, that it certainly will be coming up next year again.
Yeah.
And there will be some restrictions, but there will be compromises.
And, of course, Iraq. We've got Iraq to deal with. The new president will have to deal with Iraq. And depending on who gets elected, it will go in one direction or the other. So we're going to be right back with our good friend Jim Ostroff. We've got some more stuff to talk about. Stay with us.
Do it or die now. Stand your ground. Don't let your bed break.
We're back. 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Jim Ostroff, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Jim, one of the things that you guys talk about is the likelihood that the Democrats will pick up more seats in the Senate this year and probably more seats in the House in the 2008 election.
Yeah, we do. I mean, up to six in the Senate, and perhaps about 15 in the House.
Six won't get the Senate to the magic number of 60.
That would give the Democrats 57 votes if they're solid. And of course, we've seen sometimes that is not the case. There are different issues that divide the Democrats and the Republicans.
Now, would that 57 include Lieberman?
I know you might be saying,
why are you counting one vote? Why are you talking about one vote? Let me tell you something, folks. In the Senate, one vote is huge.
It is, and it does include Lieberman. Figuring here that he votes many times as a Democrat.
Well, he caucuses with the Democrats, even though he's not officially not a Democrat now. Jim, I've got a prediction that I'm going to make right now. Here's a new prediction from me. I'm predicting that if McCain is elected president, he will not have significant coattails, if any coattails. He may have no coattails.
Right.
If Obama, and if Hillary is elected, then I think the coattails will be marginal. If Obama is elected, I think the coattails, I think Obama will have significant coattails.
Right, right. No,
actually, what do you think?
Yes, I do, and for a period of time.
Tell the audience what I mean by coattails.
It basically means a honeymoon.
It also means that when in the election, if I'm going to vote for Obama or if I'm going to vote for McCain,
right.
What are my tendencies to vote for other people?
Right.
You know, maybe the whole party. Pull one liver and vote for the whole party.
Right, more of the.
And
whole
I believe
slate.
There'll be more of a tendency to do that if Obama is elected than the others.
I tend to think so. If Obama is elected, if he is the candidate, I think that those people who vote for him will just go straight down the line and go Democratic, where with some others, people are less, I believe, less likely to do that. And we've seen before, could be Reagan in 80 or Johnson in 64. There were some very large gains they made because of the coattail effect, that people just voted for them and their party right down the line. And that makes a difference, of course. It really does.
Well, of course, there might be wind up being some different kind of coattails. I remember Clinton had coattails in 92, but they didn't happen until 94, and they were for the other party.
it turned out that was the thing. And, of course, he was swamped. He lost big time in 94.
Right.
When the Republicans took control.
Jim, let's move over and talk a little bit about the war on terror over on page 3. That's something that's kind of the Pakistan thing is really a dangerous issue over there, isn't it now, Jim?
Well, it really is. You know, it's very key now to the region, and
Fact that they've got nuclear weapons.
They have nuclear weapons, and of course, very active Taliban cells there, Al Qaeda cells, and in fact, remember, it was Al Qaeda operatives that killed Bhutto. They did. They did because they are democratic, fun-loving people, and they did. They killed her, and they will do it to anybody else. I mean, it could go. You know, we could have a terrorist nuclear state right there, and that is frightening.
It's a very dangerous time right now over there, folks, and if you want to say an extra prayer, you might want to say a prayer that the Pakistan political situation comes to some positive resolution for the world and not in favor of the terrorists. Jim, quickly, before we talk again, there will be another big day, one in Texas and the same day in Ohio.
Right.
Next Tuesday, you got any predictions about what's going to happen?
I was going to say here that it is very likely, we feel, that this will effectively be the thumbs up sign for Obama.
Yeah,
Hillary's
got to win both of them. She's got to win both, doesn't she?
Has to win both, and very big because of proportional representation.
Yeah.
It is likely,
and it's not looking that way, is it?
No, yeah. Obama would win enough to cinch the nomination.
So a week from today, we might have a Democrat nominee, and it may not be Miss Clinton. Thank you for being here, Jim. Good job today, as always.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time, Jim Ostroff, ladies and gentlemen, with the Kiplinger Editors. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.